You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Now, Mount Stromlo lies just to the west of Canberra, in the foothills of the Brindaballa Ranges. For over a century, this hill has sported an observatory. A decade ago, a bushfire destroyed much of the observatory. Go there today and evidence of that devastating fire abounds. Astronomers' homes now just concrete slabs and a few remnant bricks scattered on the ground. The rounded walls that were once domes housing telescopes are now blackened and open to the sky. Yet, within a few dozen metres of these charred husks is a big new building of striking design. This is the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre. It is part of the Research School of Astronomy and Astrophysics. This, in turn, is a department within the Australian National University. The Space Show recently travelled to Canberra to inspect this facility. We learned that the centre provides design, manufacturing and testing capabilities for precision instruments. These instruments are being made to enhance the capabilities of the new generation of big telescopes. Almost as a sideline business, instruments are also being built and tested to fly on satellites. The university finds the centre useful in allowing student participation in technical projects. Dr. Naomi Mathers is the industry liaison engineer at Mount Stromlo. She met the Space Show team at Canberra Airport and drove us through the city and on up the mountain. After ushering our tour party of five into a huge reverberant hall, Naomi explained where we were. Can you tell us where we are now?
Okay. All right, so we're in the Integration Hall in the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre. You can tell because of the echo. So this is a real enabling capability, because to be able to integrate the large instruments that we're looking at, we need something with the high bay clearance. We need the large gantry crane to be able to move items around. And even though it's not a clean room as such, but it is a clean environment. So we're looking at an empty space at the moment, but over the next 6 months, this is going to be filled with instrumentation. So our large thermal vacuum chamber will arrive towards the end of May. So we're looking at a 3-metre diameter by about 4 metres long. So this will test the pulse plasma thruster from ANU. And it can, with an extra shroud that's put on it for the thruster testing, and then it'll also be able to test small spacecraft. We will also be getting a small thermal vacuum chamber to test CubeSats, because it's a little ridiculous to be testing a CubeSat in the large thermal vacuum chamber. If we look around the room, we already have our plasma cleaner. So this enables us to precision clean the instruments for the astronomers. But again, if we're looking at any systems that need cleaning to that level for space environment, so we can do that. We'll be able to do thermal cycling. So we've got the bake out oven over there, but we'll have a thermal cycling facility. We'll have our EMC chamber. So we'll be able to look at our EMC chamber for electromagnetic interference. So this again is important for the astronomers, but certainly for space comms. We need to be able to look at any interference in that area. We'll be adding attitude control testing, simulation and test. And I think that's about it for the integration hall. So we have the optical labs and the laser labs behind us, but in this environment, it's really more about the large-scale testing and the thermal vacuum cycling.
We asked Naomi why a facility that was notionally involved in developing astronomical instruments had so many satellite parts on display.
So for as a space engineer, this is where I get excited, because of the sort of instruments that these are, so the next generation of astronomical instruments work at cryogenic temperatures, in vacuum, and this thing sits on an earthquake, a seismically active zone. So we're talking about thermal vacuum testing, we're talking about shaking for vibration testing, which is starting to sound like a spacecraft testing to me. So there was that forward vision that with a facility like this, we're crazy if we don't look at the dual use aspect of it. And from the beginning, plan that we can test both astronomical instruments and spacecraft. And because this adaptive optics, or actually, I think it's the spectrometer. I think the spectrometer, talking about sort of 2 metres in diameter by 2 metres high. So these are big systems, which is why we need the large integration hall and the large clean room. So that means we're looking at being able to integrate decent-sized satellites, not just small instruments.
In the early 1990s, I had toured Mount Stromlo. In a tin shed, a very clean tin shed, I might add, I had been shown an ultraviolet telescope. It was in the final stages of construction. Called Endeavour, it was subsequently flown into space by the space shuttle Endeavour. Well, that tin shed has long since gone. Now the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre has taken over its functions. To our great delight, sealed in two Perspex canisters was the Endeavour telescope. Now back home to Mount Stromlo after its journey into space, unscathed by the bushfire. Alongside Endeavour, next to a huge window looking south across the ever-spreading suburbs of Canberra and the mountains beyond, was a less glamorous display. Dr. Mathers explained what this tangle of wires and circuit boards was.
I'm a bit nervous about this one because this one I don't know intimately, so I'm not going to get all the facts straight. But this is the FlatSat from Antarctic Broadband. So this was another one of the projects funded under the Australian Space Research Program. It was a collaboration with Space Flight Laboratory in Canada. And so we used their platform. The mission design was done in Australia, and so it was to provide broadband communication to the Antarctic. So rather than our poor scientists down there who produce all this wonderful data having to effectively work at dial-up speed, this would give them the broadband communication. So a demonstrator mission was performed. So we did communicate with one of SFL's satellites. So we have that was why the ground station was established up at Mount Stromlo. So that was used to perform the demonstration. And we still have the FlatSat. Unfortunately, no further funding has been made available, so this mission hasn't flown, but certainly is ready to go. So we certainly hope that this will be one of the activities that we'll see in the future, because it's certainly an important activity to be able to... I know I talked to some of the US scientists working up at Horton. They say they've got better communication up there than they do in their office back in Houston. So it's ironic that our scientists aren't sort of benefiting from the same sort of infrastructure.
So what was it going to fly on or aiming to fly?
Well, we would have produced our own, either flown it on someone else's satellite bus or generated our own. This is of a size that we could have produced this here. So it's still possible. Whether we fly it as a hosted payload or we fly our own full satellite, certainly that would be, I think that's the preference.
The six of us now shuffled over to an even less imposing display. Seemingly a pipe made of cream-coloured plastic. As they say, don't judge a book by its cover. This tube is at the forefront of Australia's space industry effort.
OK, this is one of the really fun ones. So what we're looking at here is the Australian Plasma Thruster Project. So this is the Pulse Plasma Thruster being developed at ANU. What this is a 3D printed model of the... Yes, using our wonderful new 3D printer. We're very, very pleased with our new addition. And this was one of the first things that was printed on it. So this was displayed at the launch of the space policy here last Tuesday. So this is a full-scale model of the thruster. So this will be flown with... They're working with EADIS Astrium and ESA to fly this as a test. So this will be demonstrated, an on-flight test. This will be one of the first things that's tested in the thermal vacuum chamber. So this was one of the main sort of drivers for procuring that chamber. So looking forward to around about August, hopefully, August, September, we'll see the first firings. of this this thruster up here.
This is all ion generating stuff in here, presumably. Yes.
This is the first generation thruster that we're seeing much larger scale. So this is the first generation test item, and obviously they've worked to miniaturise a lot of the technology over time.
So where's the 3D printer?
I'm fascinated
by this 3D printer.
Good question. You can see four of them in a row.
Well, this is the one we've looked at. So it's a fused deposition modelling. This particular one we're using. You can work in thermoplastics. You can work in metal. So you can have laser sintering where they selectively harden the metal. First of all, the fused deposition modelling is a cheaper technology, so we can only afford so much. But it's also interesting to us because we can, in fact, print in vacuum-compatible materials. So for the astronomers, they can print these unique forms, they're very bespoke forms that can then operate in a vacuum environment. So it's not just about printing prototypes. This is actually looking towards printing operational structures. So it's lovely to be able to see how something works. It's lovely to be able to see whether you can in fact assemble it. The waste is a lot less. So there's a lot of these complex forms. When you've got a form that needs to be the internal structure is very complex, you can't machine it. So it's a different design methodology, but it certainly opens up a whole lot of new innovation when you're able to print the structure rather than having to machine it away.
So are the screw threads all done too as well?
Yes, part of this? No, you can print the threads.
Choose your thread?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
So, you can, and this is where it's, obviously you've got the screws, so you've got the combination, but it's harnessing the best of the different technologies. So as an advanced manufacturing centre here, we certainly want to understand how we can get the best out of the technology. So having this here is important for us. It's important for the astronomers to be able to manufacture their forms. It's important for us to be able to prototype things. There is actually something called PrintSat now. So there is a PrintSat. So it's a CubeSat that has been printed and will fly. So not a prototype, a flight model. But it's at that early stages, so you have to be able to test it, understand the characteristics of the satellite. So if we're going to have that full nanosatellite test capability here, we can in fact investigate these new materials, new processes, but then have the test environment to be able to investigate their properties and how they behave. So it's again looking at all the different aspects too. The design, the integration, the test, the evaluation.
So how many places around the world would be able to do this?
It's growing. A lot of people have the small 3D printers on their desk at home. Mm. So this is a technology that's becoming quite ubiquitous. Mm. We've got an industrial grade one. Mm.
Not too many in the world would have the industrial grade.
I'd say the model we've got, three or four in Australia, maybe. But what we're certainly making ours available to other groups. So it's a fee for service, it's cost recovery, but it means you don't have to go out and buy your own 3D printer. You can come and use the one here, because until you build up the expertise in the design and the modelling and then the fabrication, sort of how do you manage the use of all the different materials? Not everybody wants to own their own, and it's not always appropriate. But we certainly have an interest in having it here.
So with two grand for a small one. One's going to operate. Who's doing that? You said it's going to be a test firing later in the year, is that?
It won't be a 3D printed.
No, but
it's been designed on campus. So okay. The physics department, yes.
They're building here.
Yeah, so they've built all this.
Before satellites are launched, they have to be vibration tested. Basically, this means you shake the hell out of it and see if bits fall off it. Well, actually, they're testing to see if any harmful resonances are present in the satellite body. We were surprised to learn that telescope instruments are also vibration tested. Naomi explained why there is a vibration test facility being installed on Mount Stromlo.
So this is going to be a new vibration and shock test facility. The astronomers need to test the instrumentation for the Giant Magellan Telescope because it's on an actively an earthquake zone. So they need to certify that the instrumentation isn't going to be impacted by any of that vibration. So the astronomers need it, but then obviously if we're going to be doing any sort of satellite testing or for instrumentation for satellites, we have to make sure that they can withstand the vibration of launch. So this also has implications for other industries. So this is a good example of a test facility that might be of interest to the mining industry or aviation. So this is just a fundamental capability. There are other vibration test facilities in Australia, but it's important that we have that end-to-end test capability. So it's about all the different tests we can do. So when the second half of the what's called the AITC2 was constructed, we did in fact lay the foundations for this test environment. So we can see here in the floor, the pit is isolated from the main foundations. So there is a gap here. We'll have the seismic block is going to be cast in situ, so that's being designed now, and will be laid in situ, and then hopefully mid to late year we'll be up and running with the so Brule and Kaya, world known for their shakers and their expertise in this area, are working with us to make this possible, and so they also look at it as an opportunity for doing more training here, so they'll use it as a training facility as well. So these are really important aspects to us. It's important for us to build those connections with industry. It's important to us to have that integrated training sort of strategy to make sure we're building up the expertise in Australia, not just providing the training facilities or the test facilities and doing the test ourselves. So it's more of an integrated approach.
This evening on the Space Show, we are on a tour of the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre at Mount Stromlo. Our guide is Dr. Naomi Mathers. Now, satellite and astronomical instruments require use of a wide range of materials. For example, glass or plastic parts may require coating with metal to make them reflective to light. Alternately, they may need to be given specific thermal properties. For that reason, the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre has a chemical laboratory. Unlike the cavernous integration hall, this laboratory was quite cosy, with barely enough room for the six of us. Naomi began with a joke about one possible use of this material processing facility.
So this is our material process lab. So this is where we can do everything from plating to cleaning. So the ladies here are all getting very excited that we can gold plate our jewellery. I do think they have a slightly different application in mind. But again, these are types of processes that a lot of companies could never justify having the capability themselves. The astronomers are great. There's a great demand in that area for specialist processing, coating, for optical reflection and emissivity, all sorts of things. And also, again, in the space environment, when we start talking about very specialist environments, specialist materials and processes needed. This is a capability that we decided was important for both groups. But again, can be an enabler for different industries who don't need to use these sorts of processes all the time, but could come here and tap into what's here.
From the confined space of the materials process laboratory, Naomi Mavlis led us toward a much larger room. Now, dirt is the bane of advanced electronics. As the components get smaller, they become more susceptible to even tiny particles of dust. A dirty camera lens may be annoying to the home photographer. It is a major problem for astronomical instruments. For that reason, they have to be assembled in dust-free environments, hence the need for what is called a clean room in the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre.
Yes. So this is a Class 10,000 clean room. So this would be the largest, definitely the largest of its class in Australia, quite possibly the largest of its class in the Southern Hemisphere for civilian use.
So in theory, there's no dust in there at all.
Oh, I don't mean nothing at all, but you're going to be hard.
That's the theory. That's the theory.
And the So just understanding how to operate a clean room like this, I find really interesting. So our manager, our test manager, has been... There's everything from specialist notebooks that are a low particle. So, oh, definitely full bunny suit. It's not a glamorous activity, but it's important. So, any small speck of dust that gets into one of the instruments for the telescope,
so brought in, it's got to go through some cleaning process.
Yes, and it's certainly so. When something's brought in or out, there's a time where everything settles, and the extractors will sort of help extract any of the extra particles.
Dr. Mathers, quite understandably, wouldn't take us, the five of us, unwashed visitors, into her nice clean room. Had she done so, it would possibly have taken months to clean up the clothing, lint, hair, dead skin cells and other dirt we would have left in the room. Instead, we looked through the windows from an adjacent room. On the floor is a large sticky pad adjacent to the entry door. Walking on this is like walking on the sticky side of sellotape. It collects and traps any dirt that might be on your shoes, or rather on the soles of the shoes. One of our party walked on this pad, unaware of its function, as Naomi was describing the clean room. Listen for the squeaks from this unusual doormat.
But this room is big enough to not only integrate the, so when it's at the spectrometer, we can also integrate some CubeSats at the same time. So we can do multiple missions at the same time.
I'm beginning to understand that when you say instrumentation, I'm beginning to understand what's involved. Have you seen this?
Very complex systems.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting to see this type of capability in Australia. So this is, it's really then up to the imagination what we can do with it. I hope what we see is lots of different industries understand that this helps them then further their own activities. They don't have to establish this sort of facility themselves. They just come in here and utilise.
You also become a centre of knowledge, of reference, so people can refer to you and they'll know they get an answer.
And hopefully a centre that then helps for collaboration. So as different companies or different groups are coming here to use the facility, there'll be crossover between them. Those lovely sticky mats.
Sticky pads.
It's all part of that.
Hamish Lindsay was one of our five on this tour of the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre. Hamish used to work in satellite tracking centres around Australia, beginning in the 1960s, pioneering days. He saw a lot of changes during his career and stands in awe of the developments in computing in the past half century.
What fascinates me, they're talking about making computers 10 atoms wide. Now, what's a speck of...
And it's going to, speck of dust is a lot bigger than that.
It's going to be a billion times faster than the biggest supercomputer we've got now because it's so small. And you say, how do you work with the atoms?
under microscopes. Things like it's a whole process of, So it's a... But I think that's where it gets exciting, is it's you're bringing together all these technologies, but understanding the process, understanding the limitations.
I mean, in 100 years from now, that'll be peanuts, you know, it'll be... history.
We would have moved on. We probably would have moved on from clunky things like, you know, circuit boards to more organic type.
But when I started in electronics, there was no other circuit boards. Everything was valves and transistors and capacitors and wired up.
So there'll be an evolution of technology rather than an evolution of technology, there'll be a revolution.
And in those days, you fix things.
Here, pondering the developments in astronomical instrumentation we might see in the near future, we conclude our tour of the Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre. Our tour guide has been Dr. Naomi Mathers. When not hosting the space show visitors, she is the industry liaison engineer at the Australian National University's Research School of Astronomy and Astrophysics. Oh, by the way, there are not many people who have a full-sized satellite sitting on a shelf in their office. Naomi does. We know. We saw it. Our photographs to support this story will be on our website in about a week. Now, you can find features that we have had on the show at the Southern FM website. It's www.southernfm.com/space. Southern FM is one word lowercase, southernfm.com/space. Then, once you're on our index page, follow the link to the 2013's documentary page, and you can find it there. And already up there is the documentary we had last week on President Kennedy's tour of Texas. This is The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie.
You're listening to the best variety music on the station that sounds great to me, 88.3 Southern FM.